Hey, welcome to North Coast Church. Today, Pastor Chris Brown is bringing the teaching to you, so open up your Bibles and listen in.
I really had no idea the directions to the place. So if you're going to grade me on this, you have to realize it wasn't all a lie. Maybe a little bit of an elaborate smokescreen to get to the end, but I really didn't know where I was going. And so that was going to be the purpose just for the short drive over there. And just the fact that I was there that night and she was sitting in the passenger seat beside me, that is what boggled everybody. And I knew I probably had one shot at this to pull everything off. So I was on my A game. My A game's not very high, but for me, it's my A game. You see, it started with mutual friends just kind of getting together. It started with her cutting my hair one night, because that's what she did for $5 a haircut on the campus at Azusa Pacific University. And once I sat there with her running her fingers through my hair and doing the squirt bottle, I was smitten. It was it. So then it was a group of friends deciding we'd all go see a movie. And when the time came up for us to meet, it was just her and I. And her friends didn't go and my friends didn't show up. And it's kind of a date, but it wasn't set up as a date, so I don't know if we call it a date. It was that next week when we were passing and I stopped and just started small talk and I asked her, "Hey, you know, up in the Anaheim Hills, there's a neighborhood that goes all out on Christmas lights and decoration. You want to drive out there and see it with me sometime? I think it kind of kick us in the holiday mood, yeah?" And to my surprise, it was immediate. She goes, "Oh, I'd love to do that." And I hadn't planned on coming back with an answer that quickly. So I was like, maybe we go and get food first. And she's like, "Yeah." And I go, "Thursday, Friday." She goes, "Friday." I go, "How about I pick you up Friday at 6? She goes, "That'd be great." And I'm like, "Sweet." And I just turned around and played that off like it was nothing. But I'm walking away going, "This is huge." I told my friends and they're like, "No way. Shut up. No way." I'm like, "I'm serious." She told her friends and they're all, "No way. No way. That guy, the obnoxious loudmouth guy who never shuts up, what kind of job will he ever get?" And so, and you have to understand, this was two worlds holding their breath. It was two different universes about to collide. It was like when Elliot stuck out his finger and E.T.'s glowed and it was like, "Oh!" Because all my friends, they're putting all their bets on me. They go, "If Chris can pull this off, it gives hope for the rest of us in this galaxy. That maybe in our future, we could date someone from her galaxy." We went back through the scrapbooks this week and said, how do I sum this up? And here's a picture of her and her college roommates standing outside their dorm. Amy is the second one from the left. She's all in black. That's Amy. And that's her roommates. I mean, talking about a classy group of young women. They were committed to their GPA. They were committed to scholarship. They were committed to getting great jobs. They were committed to excellence. Here is me and my roommates. And I'm the guy in the very back with the orange antenna coming out of my head. Okay, so now you're getting the picture. All these knuckleheads are like, "You're going out with who? The homecoming court? The girl?" And I'm like, "Yeah!" And I knew I had to pull this off. We lived in the mods. I was going to call them apartments, but they're double-wide trailers on the property. They're 64 double-wide trailers, and they call them the modulars or the mods. Here's the problem. I didn't really have enough money to take her out to eat. I'm working as a youth pastor in the inner city while I'm going to school, and I'm like, "I'm going to make dinner for her. But if I make dinner for her, you have to have a place to have dinner." And our trailer was such a wreck, you wouldn't come within 20 feet of it. But the buddies living across from me, they were all in choir. What? I'm just saying. Just a little point of fact that they're out. Which meant they had artwork on the walls. Their furniture matched. Their place always smelled good. It always sounded good. I mean, we call it the showcase because every time we went by, we're like, "What is this? You know, this is the model home that you always have set up." These guys, back in that day, we called them preppy. These guys were preppy everything. So I went over and I asked Phil. I go, "Phil, is there any way I can borrow your trailer for Friday night?" He's all, "What are you talking about, Brown?" I go, "The Amy Gibbs actually said she'd have dinner with me. I want to cook it myself." And he's all, "Oh, that's huge." And I could see in his eyes, he's like, "You don't have a prayer." And I'm like, "I know." And he's all, you need our trailer. I'm all, I know. So I made three different trips to Stater Brothers. I had the meal already. I had candles going. I had something on the stereo. The place was perfect. These guys went all out. I mean, they helped decorate romantically with little potpourri and little flower things there. And I'm like, whoa. So now I go pick up Amy. She thinks we're going out to eat. On the other side of campus, I drive back, and that's my thing. I have to go by my friend's house and get directions. The problem is it started to rain. So as I pull up, I'm like, okay, I'm going to run up and get directions. She goes, I'll just wait here. I'm like, that doesn't work. I go, no, why don't you come with me? And she goes, what are you doing? I said, I'm just getting, why don't you come with me? And she goes, I don't want to go. Now, looking back, in her mind, she thought, is this guy trying to show off to his friends that he's on a date? That's weird. Is this guy just trying to take me by all of his friends to show, hey, I'm on a date? Well, I wish that was the case. I had to get her to dinner. And finally, I just said, look, I'm going to shut off the car. I'll take a minute. Just come in, say hi. We'll get directions. And she begrudgingly came in. We kind of jogged underneath the lean-to and opened the door, knocked on it. No one was there. I opened the door, and she looked in. She goes, oh, someone's going to have a great evening. And I said, I hope we do. She goes, what do you mean? I go, that's why I did this for you. Oh, that's so thoughtful. I go, I know. I made three different dishes. Later on, I would find out she was allergic to all three, but she ate some. It's all right. Not like deathly allergic, but shouldn't be eating it. But she ate some, didn't say a word. We went out to look at Christmas lights. We go out to look at Christmas lights. I don't have directions. I don't really know how to get there. I thought I could get there because as a guy, you always think you can get anywhere. And as we start driving around, I have no clue where we're going. We're somewhere in the hills up there about, not Anaheim, Pasadena area. And we're up driving around the hills. And I have no idea the hills of Pasadena area. And as we're going, it starts to rain even more. So what Christmas lights may or may not have been out aren't even plugged in anyway because it's pouring down rain. So we're driving around just trying to find a wreath lit up in someone's window going, look at that. And after 2 hours of circling in the rain, we come back. And I don't know what to do because I don't have any money. And I pull up to her place. And now it's probably about 9, 10 o'clock. And I'm like, so what do you want to do? She goes, oh, I don't care. And I'm like, all right, maybe I'll just drop you off. She goes, okay. And I drop her off. And I come home. And my buddies go, how was the night? And I go, none of us have a shot. None of us will ever go to that planet again. We don't have game. And to my surprise, and I think it's because she felt so bad, that next Monday she caught me outside the plaza at the university and simply said, hey, thanks for dinner. Thanks for Friday's good time. I'll cook for us next time. You want to come over for dinner? Yes. Yes. Now, may I remind you, I'm the 24-year-old sophomore dating the 21-year-old senior, and her, it's all you need to know about my education. And her friends are still saying, Amy, this is a bad idea. And my friends are going, no way do you get a second shot at this. And I'm all, redemption, play this one cool. I show up at her house. The roommates are gone. Now she can cook. She cooks Cornish game hens that's slightly browned on a bed of couscous. And up until that point, I'd had no idea what either a Cornish game hen or a couscous was. But the Cornish game hens looked a lot like the quail I used to shoot in Texas. So I'm like, oh, I love those. You just got to watch out for the BBs. We're going to be fine. And I help her a little bit with the preparation. I'm like, well, she goes, we're going to put this on the table. And I look, the table's not set. And I'm like, in this table here? She goes, no, it's out on the balcony. She has cleared the balcony. She has taken the cushions off the couch. She put them on the floor of the balcony and backed up against the wall of the balcony. And she set the little coffee table out there. So we're going to sit on cushions at the coffee table on the balcony. We're going to watch the sunset behind the Arby's sign. It's going to be amazing. So we do dinner. It's a great conversation. Inya is playing on the stereo. Yeah, remember? Don't give me that. That was cool. It's a great evening. Everything's good. She has gone over the top. Conversation's been good. There's some laughter. There's some fun. I still cannot believe I'm sitting next to this incredible creature from a different galaxy and planet. And so she goes to pick stuff up. And I go, well, let me do this for you. I haven't done anything all night. So she had one of those wood trays with the handles. And I stack up all the dishes, all the glasses on it. And I'm going to carry this in the kitchen. Now the sliding door's open. We got candles outside. It's light inside. So I pick up everything. I go walking into the kitchen. And I don't drop spiritual phrases that often, but there was this presence, like this invisible force field, just saying, Chris, don't go in yet. And as I went to go step into her apartment, I felt this presence just going against me, going, no. The problem was, I had already taken a step with the tray. And this invisible force field stopped my step. But my momentum was still going. And I'm like, God, what are you doing? And that's when I start hearing the rip. And I realize the screen door was shut. And since I stepped into it, it stopped my lower legs. The bulk of my body and the tray went through it. It ripped off the frame. I try to quickly take a step, but the bottom of the screen is still there. So now I've thrown myself. And I'm going to land on all the dishes. So as I go through the screen, I throw myself to land on my back. And as I do that, the tray goes over my head. And I am laying flat on my back on her carpet. Over my head, I see dishes of Cornish game hen bones and couscouses all in the carpet. From where the screen door used to be, all the way thrown to her kitchen. I hear her scream from the balcony. She gets up and runs to what used to be a door. Looks in at me, dishes all the way across, and she starts laughing hysterically. Now, at that point, I still don't know what threw my world upside down. I was like, how did this happen? And that's when I knew you should go back to your planet. Go back to the helmets and the orange antenna people. And yet, for some reason, she liked funny guys. She didn't care how smart they were. She didn't care how good looking they were. She just liked funny guys. And that is one of the funniest things she's ever seen. And they got a third date, a fourth, a fifth, a sixth. It got 2.5 years of dating. It got her graduating, her waiting for her very much older sophomore friend to get through college. It got to me standing there in a tuxedo, her standing there in a wedding gown, all of her friends, the classy ones, my idiot dudes, promising to be on their best behavior. All of her friends still hoping she's going to pull out of this at the last minute. All of my friends, a $20 bet that she's still going to pull out of this at the last minute. She says, I do. I say, I do. We come rushing into this thing called marriage. Head over heels in love. We've had 2.5 years of laughter, 2.5 years of cuddling, 2.5 years of just hanging out. And the first couple months of marriage were amazing. Until the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. And I've talked about it before. I still remember standing there in our little apartment in Upland, California, facing each other. And the night I just told her, I don't like being married to you anymore. And the night she looked at me, she goes, I don't like being married to you either. And I remember saying, I remember we used to be in love. And she says, that seems like a long time ago. It was 7 months ago. And it started a 3-day conversation that I thought was the beginning to the end. And yet looking back, that 3-day conversation redefined everything about love and marriage. I didn't want to love her again. I didn't want to be in love with her again. I didn't want to spend any more days with her again. She likewise felt the same thing. It had been a long time since there was just cuddling and laughter in the relationship. And I got to the place where so many get and go, oh, I just fell out of love. We fell out of love. Nothing against her. She's a great gal. Wish her the best. Just not for me. We fell out of love. And what we realized is we never chose to start loving. And in our mind game series, it's been 18 years since that day. 18 years of the most incredible woman in my life by far that we almost threw away because we didn't understand a new definition of love. My hope is today, church, my prayer is today, we come and we redefine love, not our definition, the one he gives us. And I'm not talking marriage. Some of you are already like, well, I'm not married. I'm already divorced, or I'm single, or I'm going to... No, we're not talking marriage. I just want to redefine how are we supposed to love the way he redefined it. So we get to Romans 12, where it says, okay, you're going to be a Christian. Therefore, because of everything God has done for you, you offer your body as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to him. Let me tell you what you need to do. You need to be renewed by changing your mind. And we've been doing this series, what is the mind change we have to have if we're really Christians? And today we're going to tackle a big one. Now, I want all of you to repeat after me. Every venue, every campus, repeat after me. Carlsbad, Fallbrook, Green Oak. By the way, special shout out to Okinawa. 3 different groups meeting now because you've overgrown one home. Absolutely love the way you men and women serve us and others. And a special shout out to the men's group in Kansas City that watches this every Monday night, a day delayed. Love you guys. Take care of Danny. And so here's what I want. Everyone, every place, every venue. Edge, you got to be in on this. Here we go. Repeat after me. Chris, this will be incredibly unfair Okay, we got it out of the way. We know it. I know it. We're going to jump into it. If you got a Bible, we're in the book of John, chapter 13. Back of the Bible, look for the guys' names. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. John, chapter 13. New Testament, back of the Bible. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. We're going to do John 13, 14, and 15. We can't read it all. We're going to jump around, and I'll tell you what's happening. It all happens in one night, also around one table, also with a group of people that were sitting on the floor. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, back of the Bible. Pretty easy to flip it and find the guys' names. Three quarters of the way back, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John 13. Another great reminder. If you don't have a Bible, we'll give you one for free or sell them for $5. If you have a Bible, bring it. We'll always tell you where to turn. You'll never feel left out. And at the beginning of every Bible, it tells you what page number the books are on. John 13, verse 1. We there? Yeah, I'm excited. I'm feeling good. Maybe the triple shot's kicking in. I don't care. Here we go. So it was just before the Passover feast, and Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Now, having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. Now, the evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. And Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God, and that he was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, wrapped a towel around his waist, and after that he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. And John just sets the scene. That's all we're reading in 13 verses 1 through 5, the beginning. He goes, it was that night, that place, that upper room. It was the time of Passover. You can't find a better time politically, socially, nationally, spiritually, in the time of a nation than Passover week. It is that one time the entire year every Jewish family will come to a screeching halt and celebrate one meal the exact same way, the exact same words. And every Jewish family wants to celebrate it at least once, if not every year, in Jerusalem. At that time that Jesus is gathering to do this meal with his boys, it had been 1,446 years, 1,446 BC, since Moses led the slaves out of Egypt. And God said, I want you to remember this time. I want you to remember the day I passed over your people, that none of your people died, but Egypt got rocked to save you. I want you to remember it was flatbread that didn't have time to rise before you baked it. I want you to remember with cups of blessing and promises, and one of the cups that one day I will send my Redeemer. They either call it the Messiah or the Christ. This is that day, that night in all of history. He stands, picks up a cup, and says, it's all been about me. He entered that week. We call it Palm Sunday with the cheers of the crowd. Hosanna, save now. Come with power, set up a kingdom. The Jewish nation is tired of being enslaved by the Babylonians, by the Persians, by the Syrians, by the Greeks, now by the Romans. They want their freedom back. And for 3 years, he's had the teaching and miracle as if to say, I could be that Christ. I could be that Messiah. And now they're waiting for it. And of all weeks, in all places, in all cities, in all nations, in all of history, that's the one he comes riding into town. And in that upper room, they're about to have a meal. As in every Jewish home, it would have been set up. As soon as you come in the door, there's a wash basin with a pitcher of water. The lowest servant in the house, it's their job to wash the feet. I don't know how to say this without offending people. There's great words, dung, manure, but we're talking about crap here. That's exactly what's happening. Your roads are filled with it. All of your transportation is animal. Their emissions, if you will, are nasty. You walk with open-toed feet. It's why foot washing was a big deal. It wasn't a sign of humbleness. It was a sign of don't bring that junk in my house. And the lowest servant would wipe that between the toes of the travelers, would make sure it was all cleaned off. And no one had done it in that night because it's Jesus and disciples. There is no low servant in that room. We're all very important people. So Jesus takes off his cloak. He wraps that towel that would have been there around his waist. He grabs the pitcher, the basin, and he kneels at the feet and says, I'll wash the crap off your toes. And the rest of this chapter, he gets to Peter, and Peter's all, Lord, no way. No way. And Jesus goes, if I don't wash your feet, then you have no part of me. And Peter goes, then wash all of me. And he goes, no, Peter, you don't need a shower. This is an act I'm doing. And then he said, guys, if I am your master, do this for you. You go do this for others. This is the role you now take. He goes, by the way, one of you is about to betray me. Judas gets up and he runs out of the room. We finish chapter 13. We come to verse 31. 13:31. So when he, being Judas, was gone, after he left the room, Jesus said, now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. And if God is glorified in him, God will glorify the Son in himself and will glorify him at once. My children, I will be with you only a little while longer. You will look for me, just as I told the Jews, so I now tell you, where I am going, you cannot come. A new command, though, I give to you. Love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. He goes, guys, this is my time. Tonight the guards are going to come. Tonight they will take me to the trial. They're going to take me to the cross. You're going to look for me. You won't be able to find me. You won't be able to catch up with me where I'm going. It's just a solo mission on this one. So now a new command. The last 3 years of teaching, love, miracles, everything. It all comes down to this. You love others. In the way that I loved you. May I remind you, I just took care of your feet. That's how we're loving from now on. That's the new command. That's what the entire program's been about. That's what the mission has been about. Now it's on you guys. Peter immediately jumps in. Lord, if they're going to come and take you, I'll die with you. And he goes, no, you won't, Peter. Yes, I will, Jesus. He goes, look, even before the rooster crows, you're going to disown me 3 times. He's like, oh, you're usually pretty good on this now. And the other disciples don't say a word. He comes to chapter 14 and he goes, hey, don't let your hearts be troubled. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I wouldn't have told you this. Where I go, I'm going to prepare a place for you. Heaven's big. There's room for you. Just keep that in mind. And the disciples go, we don't know where you're going. He goes, I'm the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life. And the other disciple goes, can you just show us God? And he goes, I am God. And they're like, we don't like this. This is getting serious. He goes, it's better if I go. If I go, my spirit, the Holy Spirit will be with you always. They still don't understand it. So John 15, we just covered 13, 14. John 15, verse 1, he says, let me tell you a story. And this is where it gets good. See what he's doing? Last night, these are famous last words, that upper room around that table, he knows he's about to go and die. He's going to take the cup and the bread and say, all of history has been waiting for me. I am the promise for 1,446 years the Jewish nation has been based on. I am the promise, our last series, the book of Genesis, back 2,100 years to the time of Abraham. He stands in a room of Jewish men and go, I am all that history has been waiting for. I'm the one, I'm the seed, I'm the promise. Now I got to go do my ultimate act of love. And I want you to love the way I've loved you. And they're getting caught up on, can you show us heaven? Can you show us God? Why can't you stay? So he brings it down to a picture. John 15. I'm the true vine. My Father is a gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, oh, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I've spoken to you. Remain in me, and I will remain in you. See, no branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you just remain in me. Okay, guys, listen. I am the vine. You are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Circle, highlight, underline. If, circle that, anyone does not remain in me, he is like a branch that is thrown away and withers, and such branches are picked up and thrown into the fire and burned. If, circle that, you remain in me, and my words remain in you, underline. Ask whatever you wish. It'll be given to you. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. As the Father loved me, so I love you. Now remain in my love. If you obey my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I obeyed my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you, that your joy may be complete. My command is this, love each other as I have loved you. Circle, star, underline, highlight, smiley face. Greater love is no one than this, that he laid down his life for friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. It's that last night. It's famous last words. He sits and, guys, this is what it's all been about. From now on, here it is. Here's a new command. Love others. Well, I like a lot of people. No. Let me define it for you. Love others the way I loved you. love others the way I loved people. I not just defined it, I gave you an example. That's how you do it from this point on. But what about heaven? But what about God? He goes, just remain in this 11 times. Remain, 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 remain. 4 times he goes, if you do this, then this will happen. That's Christianity. It's what he wanted screaming in their brains the last night. He took the entire discourse, the entire narrative, the entire story of that night and says it's all been about how you're going to love others. It's a new command. Do this. Remain in those words. I will be with you. My joy will be with you. You will find joy in life. You will find purpose if you love others the way I love you. That's what I want to get in. We still have a tendency to go back and redefine it. In your note sheet, I've just kind of called this love, BC or AD. Not before Christ or Anno Domini in the year of our Lord. In our personal lives. What love was without Christ. And what love should be now with Christ. Before Christ in my life, after he died for me. And I found out about that in my life. How does it redefine love? So let me give you what love looked like without Christ and how we have to redefine it if we truly call ourselves a Christian. Number one, without Christ, love is an emotion. Isn't it? Love is an emotion. I love me some sushi. Sushi made me smile. I love sushi too much, it shows, but that's all right. Love sushi. Love Chicago deep dish pizza. Love fishing anywhere, anytime. You know, and I'll say this publicly, I don't care. I spent 4 hours fishing in a guy's swimming pool on a Saturday once when I had nothing to do, about 15, 16 years ago. Sat there with a lawn chair, my tackle box. I just tried every lure I had, everything, in a swimming pool. That's when my brother said, you're certifiably nuts. And I'm like, it's fishing. He goes, can it really be fishing if you know there's no fish? I go, watch this. Fishing. Love fishing. Love fishing. See, before Christ, love was simply an emotion. The things that made me feel good, the things that made my heart beat. She is something I fell in love with. Love is an emotion. Jesus comes and goes, no, no, no. With Christ, love is a choice. It is a choice. It's not an emotion. These new commands he wants to get. He goes, love people the way I loved you. It wasn't an emotion. It's a choice. You have to choose to really be, are you part of the Christian life or not? Are you going to do this with Christ? Or are you going to go back to, I love the things that make me feel good, the people that make me feel good, and the things that don't make me feel good, and the people that don't make me feel good, I choose not to love. He goes, congratulations. That was before Christ. Now, it's a command. Now, it's a choice that I'm giving you. John 3:16, maybe the most popular verse in the Bible. People still hold it up at baseball games, football games, in the end zone. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. God so loved, he gave. It was a choice. It didn't say God loved the world so much that he thought about you, made him smile, made him feel warm and fuzzy inside. God loved and he felt good. No. It's like, you know what God's love is? It's a choice. Did something with it. Let me put it this way. Without Christ, love is an option. Love is simply an option. I get to choose the things I love and the things I don't love based on my emotions. I choose the people I love. I choose the people I don't love. It is an option. It is my prerogative. Before Christ was in my life, I get to choose the things and the people I love and how I want to love them or how I don't want to love them. It's simply an option. With Christ, love is a command. It is a command. May I remind you, he doesn't command us to do the things we naturally want to do. A command means you're not going to like doing this. A command means it's not going to come natural to us. You must do this. He goes, guys, everything I've set up for the last 3 years shows how we are going to love differently. He goes, you will be known, you are my disciples, by the way you love others. How do you know I have changed from the old Chris to the new Chris? How do you know I've changed from the old life to I'm really a Christ follower? He goes, simple. You now choose to love people you normally wouldn't love. I wrote it down this way in my note sheet. Love is not something you fall into. It's something you turn into. Love isn't something you fall into. It's something you decide to turn into. I'm going to decide to be a person that acts loving. I might not even like them. I never like what's going on, but I choose to respond lovingly. Love is something we turn into. Love is something we start to become simply because we're doing this with Christ. I love 1 Corinthians 13. It's one of those premier passages that's read at weddings. Unfortunately, it's been read at so many weddings. I have a lot of weddings now saying, just don't read that chapter. It's been at everybody's wedding we went to. And I'm like, oh, can we really overuse Bible? But 1 Corinthians 13, just listen to this. Listen to the definition of biblical love and ask yourself, how many of these are emotions? How many of these are options? Are these choices? If I speak with the tongues of men and angels but have not love, I'm only a resounding gong. I'm just a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and I can fathom all mysteries and knowledge, if I have faith that can move mountains but I have not love, then I'm nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames but I have not love, I gain nothing. I love Paul saying. He goes, I don't care how much you know the Bible. I don't care much how much theology. You may consider yourself spiritual. You may even pull off prophecies or do miracles. He goes, but if you're not choosing to love, you're nothing. You're nothing. Christianity is not about how much the Bible you know. It's not about how much you have memorized. It's not if you know words in the Greek or the Hebrew. It's not about how long you've been walking with Christ. It's not about how spiritual you claim to be. He says, it all comes down to, are you loving or not? And if you have all this, but you're not loving, he goes, let me tell you something. You're nothing. And immediately we go, oh, good, because I love some people. He goes, no, let me define it. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. Love is not rude. It isn't self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Well, that's a good one. Anybody ever have a relationship where people keep bringing up the past? Where did we leave off? Okay, it keeps no record of wrongs. Well, let's start right here. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil. It rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. You get that? There's only one emotion he gave, anger. And he goes, love isn't easily angered. Everything else he gave was a choice. Everything else he says love is defined by, it's patient, kind, doesn't envy, doesn't boast, isn't proud, isn't rude, isn't self-seeking, not easily angered, no record of wrongs. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love is a choice. It is not an emotion. It is not a feeling. Amy and I come running into this wedding thing thinking that our feelings and our emotions was all that we needed to have a life together. And I realized within the first few months in there, she's a sinner. Man, she's a messed up woman. Because every single one of us are. Every single one of us is a sinner. Every single one of us has baggage. And now I have her and then me and just the bonehead I am in my past. I'm crushing it. And it was great when I was looking forward to Friday night to see her. Now I have to see her every day. I got old after 3 months. She kept waiting for the romance and the flowers and for me to make dinner. And I'm like, I did that a year ago. Oh, the wheels came off. And Jesus sits down and goes, here's a new command. You call yourself a Christian, you're going to choose to love. You're going to make choices, not based on emotions. It's not an option. This is a command I've given you. See, without Christ, love is fair, isn't it? Without Christ, love is fair. If people love me, I will love them. If people are mean or rude to me, I will not love them. That's fair. Without Christ, human love is on, how does this make me feel? What have you done to me? And as long as it's good, I will love you. But the moment you hurt me, the moment you neglect me, the moment you turn your back on me, the moment you act selfish or rude toward me, I withhold my love. That is completely fair. I applaud that. With Christ, love is unfair. Incredibly unfair. If you're in John, turn a couple books to the left, Matthew, chapter 5. Let's see, you're in John, so you're going to go past Luke, Mark, and back to Matthew. Matthew 5:43. Let me show you how incredibly unfair Christianity is. Oh, I hate this passage. By the way, every time I say something like that, which happens quite often, I always have someone around, "You're a pastor. I wish you wouldn't say you hate the scripture." I hate a lot of this book. If I picked the parts I liked, I'd have an 8-page Bible. All the parts that say God loves me, wants the best for me, wants to make me rich and wealthy, and no matter what I do, there's heaven. That's a good Bible. I come to so many parts I just do not like. And God goes, "Hey, buddy, the ones you don't like, that's for you." And I'm like, "I know. It's okay not to like parts of the Bible. But what you do with it, I don't expect everything I tell my kids for them to like it. When I tell my kid to pick up Legos and the playroom is a foot and a half deep with nothing but Legos, I don't expect them to go, "Can I, Dad? Can I put them all away by myself?" I expect them to go, and I'm like, "Look, the guy's going. That's amazing. Love that kid. Love that kid." This is a Lego passage I hate. Jesus is talking to the crowd. He goes, "You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. You heard that love was fair. Love people that love you, hate people who hate you. Now I tell you, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. He causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good, and he sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous." He goes, look, you've heard it said that love is fair. Love people that love you, hate people that are your enemies. And those that are persecuting you right now, oh my gosh, nothing to do with them. He goes, that's fair. Now I'm telling those of you that say you are children of God, you're saying you're children of God and God is love. Let me tell you what love will look like. But it's only for those of you that are going to be Christians. Everyone else, go back to loving fairly. If you're a Christian, you love your enemy. If you're a Christian, you pray for those that persecute you. Well, who's he talking about? I'm talking about your ex. I'm talking about the custody battle. I'm talking about the jerk boss. I'm talking about the business partner that stabbed you in the back. I'm talking about the coworker that's talking smack about you. I'm talking, well, you have the name. You have the name. He goes, no, this is only for those that are going to be children of God. If you don't want to be a child of God, go back to loving fairly. Verse 46, you see, if you love those who love you, what reward are you going to get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your brothers, what are you doing more than the others? Do not even the pagans do that? He goes, no. Don't tax collectors, pimps, drug dealers, don't they love people that are in their posse and hate people that are against them? That's the type of characters you want to be with? The world loves people who love them, and the world repels people that don't. That was without Christ. You want to say, I'm doing this life with Christ. Here's part of the new command. Here's what real loving looks like. It's incredibly unfair. Oh, when you bring this down into marriage, let me write it this way. Without Christ, marriage is 50-50. Without Christ, marriage is 50-50. In fact, this will represent my spouse. Sorry, Amy. This will be me. Marriage is simply this thing. We're going to meet each other halfway. When you respect me, I'm going to love you. If you disrespect me, I'm probably not going to love you that much. It's 50-50. It's fair. Marriage is fair without Christ. It's 50-50. He goes, with Christ, marriage is 100%. With Christ, no. It's not about what your spouse does to you. It's not about whether or not she respects you. It's not about whether or not he's loving you. He says fairness is out the window. Marriage is one of the most unfair commitments, covenants in the entire Christian realm. And he goes, that is how you're going to show the world you're different. You're set apart. You will not have a marriage based on fairness. You're not going to have a marriage based on 50-50. You're not going to have a marriage based on how do they make me feel? What are they doing for me? He goes, it's done. And the world will know we're different because of our marriages are incredibly unfair. You want to write down next to that Ephesians 5, 21 through 25. Ephesians 5, 21 through 25. He says, now submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. And he's going to cover this all the time. It's about Christ. It's about Christ. Because you're going to look at each other and go, well, that's not fair. He goes, I know. This one's for me. He goes, you submit to one another in marriage out of reverence for your Christ. Yes, wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. For husband is head of the wife, as Christ is head of the church, his body, of which he is Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, Wives should submit to their husbands in everything. Husbands, agape, sacrificially love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. In the first century, in a world of Greek and Roman marriages and family life, in a world even more twisted than our current state of marriage in America today, in a world where women were simply tools for birthing and raising children, always to be kept at home, where men's sexual conquest and identity was almost always found outside the home, in a day and age where women didn't respect their husbands because, God, why would they? And men didn't love their wives, not sacrificially. They used their wives to consider an offspring and to homesit and babysit them until they got of age. Ephesians 5 comes ripping into the Greek and Roman Empire. And God took the entire scope of marriage, goes, that's without Christ. With Christ, let me tell you how your home is going to be different in your neighborhood. Wives, you submit, you respect your husband as to the Lord. He quickly covered that. Because the loophole is, he doesn't deserve respect. It's almost as if God goes, I know, you do this one for me. You notice that? See, in a marriage where the husband deserves respect, there's not a qualm with that. A woman loves to respect her husband. Man, I respect that guy. He goes, this is for everyone. It's going to be a struggle. You do this as for me. As the church submits to Christ. There's your picture. As we are obedient to Christ. Ladies, you're obedient to your husband. And all the guys are like, love Christianity. And he goes, wait a second, Bozo, the next one's for you. You sacrificially love your wife to the point of death, just as Jesus died for that church. You lay your life down for that woman. You think Jesus wanted to go to the cross? Three times that night, he begged God he didn't want to do it. And he got up and walked into it. He goes, that's how you love that woman. She doesn't respect me. She doesn't. It's been a long time since we laughed. And he goes, I don't care. This is incredibly unfair. That's how you know you're with Christ. That's how you know you're called to a different purpose. That's how you know you're set apart. That's how your home will be different in this day and age. Chris, I get it, but you don't understand my husband. No, it's about Christ. Hey, Chris, I get it, but that woman hasn't. No. You deserve to be died for? Come on. You deserve what God gave us? This is God's way of saying, I got you on this one. I showed my ultimate act of love of what I've done for you, and don't tell me you deserve it. Now I'm just asking you do it to the person you said I do to. You at least got to choose who you do it to. God says, I've done this for you. You turn around and you do this and you give this back. It was a 3-day conversation 18 years ago where I said, we're done. Here's the problem. I'm a youth pastor in the inner city at a large Baptist church. If you don't know anything about Baptist, I'll just sum it up for you. If a youth pastor gets a divorce, you're no longer Baptist. I'm stuck. I got a bunch of high schoolers, a couple hundred high schoolers from the inner city we're making a huge impact on. I hate going home because she's there. And we started working out. What's wrong with you? And she goes, I'll tell you what's wrong with me. You haven't. I'm like, man, that's a list. She's like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, this is broken. And what we didn't understand, we thought was the beginning of the end. We're getting out, and what do I need to be loved? How do I need to be respected? How's this thing work? What we didn't understand is we were coming back to just a biblical definition of God going, look, you knucklehead, let me back into this thing. But if you're not remaining in me, I can't remain in you. If you're not in me and my command to love, my joy isn't going to be with you. We talked about contentment last week. He goes, it's out the window if you're doing this on your own, because apart from me, you can do. He says, guys, I need you to love my way. This is the whole program. This is what the entire show's been about. You go, that's incredibly unfair. He goes, oh, I know it. I was unfair to you first. Checkmate. See, without Christ, love is all about me. With Christ, love is all about them. Without Christ, it's how does Chris feel? What's been done for Chris lately? How is Chris being treated? Because I tell you, that's how I'm going to respond. Loving or unloving? That is fair. Yes, it is. That is the world's view of love. Everyone has it. And he goes, with me? Incredibly unfair. It's not about you. It's about them. It's about her and it's about others. I'm going to ask you to do some stuff that's incredibly unfair. And you got to commit to this 100% regardless of what you get in return. You go, God, that's incredibly unfair. He goes, I know I did it to you. Oh, that line always gets me. So let me give you three things. Why should we love unfairly? Number one, it's the first step of obedience. It is the very first step of obedience. If it's in your mind right now, let me get it out of your mind. This is not an option in the Christian life. This is not, Chris, I've done most things in the Christian life. Is there like extra credit? Oh, you want extra credit? Love people you don't like. I don't need that much extra credit. Chris, I love following God. I come on the weekends, love North Coast. We're studying. I'm a Christian. Is there anything else I should do? How about love your wife incredibly unfairly, the way God unfairly loved you? Yeah, I'm not willing to go that far with him. Then you're not going anywhere with him. 1 John 4:19, it's in the very top of your note sheet, but you can write it down right next to there. 1 John 4:19, we love because he first loved us. If anyone says, I love God, yet hates his brother, he's a liar. You see, anyone who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. And he's given us this command, whoever loves God must also love his brother or sister. John, the only disciple that lived to old age, the only disciple that wasn't murdered, the only disciple exiled on the island of Patmos, writes a book and goes, I'm watching this Christianity now for a couple decades. People are saying they love God, but they're not loving others. He goes, let me tell you, you're not loving God. God is love. If you truly love God, the first step is saying, I'm going to love others. It's like saying, you know who I want to be like when I grow up? I want to be like Kobe Bryant. I'm like, really? You're going to be like Kobe? Yeah, I idolize Kobe. I'm going to be like Kobe Bryant, except none of the basketball stuff. I'm like, what do you mean none of the basketball stuff? I want to be like Kobe Bryant. I just don't want to do the basketball stuff or the jersey or the team stuff. Nothing with basketball. I'm like, isn't that all Kobe is? In fact, I don't know Kobe Bryant outside of basketball, except for one thing, and you don't want to go there. And so I'm like, what do you mean? It's Christianity. Say, I want to be like Christ. I'm just not going to love people like that. Well, that's all he's about. No, I'm going to be like Christ. I'm not going to love my spouse like that. That's the jersey. The jersey is love. He goes, people are going to know you're on the team when you start wearing the jersey of unconditional choice to love people. That's the team. Well, I want to be on the team. I just don't want to play basketball. That's the team. He goes, that's it. He goes, that's what I did for three. That's what I did. That's what I taught. That's how I loved. I told you that's the command. That's what you do. No. I want to come so you make my life better. He goes, no, I'm the example. You're a Christian. That is not a title. That is a definition. North Coast, hear me. Campuses, venues. Christianity. It is not a title. It is a definition. It is Christians, those who live like Christ. It's not a title. It's not a religion. It's not the type of church you go to. It's not the box you put on the census. It is a definer. That person is loving like Christ. You either are loving like Christ or you're not. He goes, that is the team. That's what we're about here. That's the command, guys. I'm telling you, this is the program I have set up. The world will know you're different because that's the jersey you wear. They're going to look at your marriage and go, man, that guy's incredibly unfair to his wife. In the weirdest and best of ways. Your friends are going to tell you, leave the bum. Why are you assuming that the guy's a jerk? And they're going to see how you love him and go, man, that's incredibly unfair. They may even call you ignorant or stupid. And that's the place you come in because they call Jesus that. They killed him for it. To get to a place and go, that's different. That's different. It is the very first step of obedience. It is not an option. Two, it allows us to experience God's power. In that extreme act of loving unfairly, he now is in our life and have room to work. He goes, if you're remaining in this commitment, I can remain in you. But if you're disobedient in this commitment, how can I be in you? He goes, this is what I'm doing in you and through. I'm changing you to be a person of love so you can love others. If you're choosing not to love, he goes, my power's not in you. My spirit's not in you. That's what the power's about. I'm going to change you. You don't fall into love. He said, I'm going to turn you into love, and you're going to love others. If you refuse to be turned into love, he goes, that's the power. That's the power. Thirdly, it allows us to be in God's plan. You go, what's God's plan for my life? To love others the way he loved others? What's that going to do? Oh, it's going to give him every avenue, every relationship to be a light. Everything you need to be an evangelist. You're like, I'm not an evangelist. If you're loving your spouse the way you're supposed to, you are. If you're protecting your singleness the way you're supposed to, you are. If you're loving other people the way you're supposed to, oh, you're an evangelist. You're someone who's constantly being a light. It's different from the rest of the world. We got to be different, not where we go on the weekends, how we live out there. And he goes, this is the first step of being on the team. This gets my power in your life. This now is my plan and how I'm going to work in you and through you. I'm taking it home. If love is an action, do something. If love is an action, if it's a choice, it's a commitment, you're following a command, then do something. What are you doing? Not how are you feeling about people. Sometimes I think Christians use an excuse, oh, I just love the world. Oh, I feel for the world. God doesn't want you to love or feel for anything. He wants you to do something to somebody. So if love is an action, don't worry about how you feel. Don't worry about how you feel. I love James 2, 15 to 17. You might want to write that down. James 2, 15 to 17. He goes, I suppose someone comes to you, a brother or sister without clothes and daily food, and you go, oh, I wish you well. I'm going to pray for you. He goes, what good is that? He goes, that's spiritual mumbo jumbo. In the same way, faith, if not accompanied by action, is also dead. He goes, a person doesn't need your prayers. A person needs your love, and that's a choice to help. He goes, that's where we start. So let me give you two questions as you're about to walk out the door. Number one, where are you loving someone now where you don't want to or need to? Self-quiz. Where are you loving someone now where you wouldn't want to or you don't need to? You're like, I'm loving a boss. Well, you're doing that for your job. You need to. Where are you loving someone now where you don't want to or need to? That I can pinpoint and go, now you're doing something with Christ. Or are you fairly loving the way the world says to fairly love? Where are you unfairly loving someone you don't want to or need to? If you can't come up with that, man, I'm asking you to put on the jersey today. I'm asking you to stop being a title of Christianity. Start having a definition of this is a Christian. This is somebody Christ would love and how Christ would want to love them. Or last question, who do you need to start loving today? People come up and say, how do I love the ex? How do I love the guy that still treats me like the kids, like a jerk? How do I love the... I'm not saying you feel anything. I'm saying when you respond to them, you respond in a loving word. The world says every time you meet them, you pull a pin on the grenade and you lob it in that guy's face. That's fair. After what they've done, that's fair. And Jesus goes, no, no, that's your enemy. That's your persecutor. You react and show them love. Show them you're different from the world. And someone may put together, I think that person is a Christian. Because they're acting like Christ. He goes, it's the first step to being on the team. It's not a final option for extra credit. Christian, how we doing? I told you at the beginning, this one is incredibly unfair. And I thank God he loves us incredibly unfair. He has never once given me what I deserved. Instead, he gave me grace and mercy and forgiveness. And now he goes, your turn. That's who you follow. Father, may we continue to be a people and a church that's defined by this act because it's what you were defined by. God, your word simply says, God is love. End of story. And if we are followers of a loving God, may we be loving people that also give sacrificially. First at home, and then outside those walls. So we know we're walking with you. Our obedience allows your power to be in our life to change us from the inside out. And your spirit of love will give us what we need to love unfairly. So we'll be in your plan, and the world may see we're different. God, may today be a day we've redefined love. And we've thrown out fairness. We'd accepted to follow and be defined by you. In Jesus' name, amen.
So before we close, if you want more information about this teaching or any other teaching, just go online, www.northcoastchurch.com. Or you can come see us at 2405 North Santa Fe Avenue in Vista, California. Check the website for times of services. And now let's get back to some closing thoughts from Pastor Chris.
You know, as you go, I love the way John started that entire scene that night in that room. Looking back and reflecting on it, the right words were picked when he said, having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. This is what happened that last night. Two examples and a story. He said, I will be the one who drops to a knee and literally washes the crap off of people who don't deserve it, including the guy that's about to betray me. And then he goes, I'm a vine. You're the branch. There's a new command. Love people the way I love you. Remain in those words in that command. He said, I'll be with you. Second example, he went to the cross. He goes, that's how you love others. He goes, I did it for you. I know it's unfair. Look at my life. You choose. You can take a title of Christian for whatever it's worth. Or you can be defined by being a Christian, one who's on the team. And the team is about love. I told you it was unfair. But I don't know about you. I love the unfairness of God's love in my life. And when I step out in that, the work I've seen him do in and through me, when I start loving people, that's when I know I'm involved in kingdom stuff, not Chris stuff. Choice is always ours. We're going to give you a chance to practice it today. So on your way out, turn around and pretend like you love somebody. We'll see you next week.